Evidence and Answers begins right now.
This is Evidence and Answers radio broadcast with our host, Pat Zukeran. Pat is an author, teacher, and international speaker in the area of Christian apologetics, the defense of the Christian faith. What secrets lie hidden in the caves of Qumran? On this episode, our panel of scholars dives into the discovery heard around the world and the fascinating lives of the Essenes who preserved these sacred texts. We will also explore intriguing finds like the Copper Scroll and what it may reveal about hidden treasures from the temple. Join us now as we connect archaeology and scripture in a powerful and compelling discussion. If you've missed any part of this broadcast, log in at evidenceandanswers.org, and there you will find this discussion entitled The Dead Sea Scrolls, and you'll also find hundreds more podcasts that you may download or listen online. Now let's get right into the conclusion of today's broadcast.
We know these people were unique, they were sectarian, but at the same time they were very true to Judaism. Some people say, well, they rejected the temple in Jerusalem. I don't believe so. I believe they rejected the priesthood surrounding the temple and the fact that it was under Herodian control and Roman control, and there were a lot of things that, shall we say, violated the sanctity of the temple, and in one sense they thought of themselves as a spiritual community, but I think they still regarded that temple in Jerusalem as the temple of God, although they were hoping and praying that it would be replaced by a more perfect temple, which we read about in the Temple Scroll, which they had, as well as a text called the New Jerusalem.
Truly fascinating. So the picture we're getting is this is of a broader community, a multifaceted community that had a celibate contingency. It probably had some married contingency. Very, very interesting. So, Joe, I'm going to move now away from who these people were to more of their practice or scribal practice. So, two questions. First, how were these scrolls preserved? How did we archaeologists go and discover them? And what do we find about their practice, the actual sitting down and writing them out? As Dr. Price said, maybe not all of them were created at this community that they were brought in. But for those that were created at this community, what does it tell us about the role of a scribe?
Well, the more and more we look into these ancient manuscripts, we find that the scribe was a faithful copier of God's word. They took their job seriously. They copied the scripture with very focused detail. They emphasized what they were doing, and they saw it as a service to God. And if you approach copying or transmitting the scriptures that way, you know that they are going to look at every jot and tittle, the smallest marks in the Hebrew language. Every word had meaning to it. And so they were faithful copiers. That's why we see such consistency of the transmission process over hundreds of years. But what we find in the scrolls themselves tell us a bit about their scribal practices and about how they preserve the word. They used certain types of ink. They had writing materials. They had certain implements to write on. They had leather. Was the predominant, and papyrus was a very prominent material to write these things on. Leather was the majority. Papyrus was used sparingly. Papyrus was made of course, the papyrus plant that grew along the Nile in Egypt, and they would cut it into strips and cross-layer it and make it into what we know as paper. And that wasn't always easy to come by, and it wouldn't last a long time. If we're very fortunate, we find papyrus that's lasted hundreds of years. And we did have some in the Dead Sea Scrolls. We find that the leather was their preferred writing materials of choice, and that held more formal documents, and the papyrus held more personal documents, or papyrus could be used to copy more formal documents for the scribe's personal use. So we look at this and we are astounded at these practices that occurred between the 3rd century BC to about the 2nd century AD, and we find this extreme care and preservation. And as Dr. Price said, we don't know exactly where these documents were copied at and where they were pinned and where the scribal work took place. But when you excavate Qumran, many found different ink wells, many inkwell jars where they would store the ink and for writing. They had benches, they had large tables, and of course the proximity from Qumran to the caves in which these were found have led many to believe that some of these documents were copied there at Qumran. We don't know that for sure. It's under dispute. But ultimately, these texts give us a broad perspective of the scribal practice in Israel at the time. And that is what's so marvelous about it. We can learn so much about how they preserve the word.
Hmm. Randall, do you have any further thoughts on scribal practice or what you've discovered?
I do. I wanted to add something because Joseph, this is somewhat uncertain as to whether they were copied at Qumran. One of the contributions I hope to make as we publish all of our excavation work is to show that we now have, I think on a scientific basis, can argue that they were done at Qumran. One of these is that you look in the caves where the scrolls came from, and you don't just find scrolls, you find other things. You find oil lamps, you find bowls, you find things like this. No coins per se, those are in the residential caves, but in the hiding caves, they carried oil lamps with them up there and they left them behind. There's a unique kind of oil lamp that was made in the late Hellenistic and the early Hasmonean period, which is the period when scrolls were written. They were written in a period called Qumran 1b, which is somewhere from around, let's say, 100 BC forward, maybe up to maybe 31 BC. There's debate on that. But it was written in the late Hellenistic, early Hasmonean period. And these oil lamps were made at Qumran. They're unique. They've got this Hellenistic look to them, a long snout and a handle on one end. But they're not found anywhere else in any other context. So those were found in Cave 1, the very first cave that was found. And then some fragments were found at Qumran. When we dug on the plateau, we found an intact one, unused, right, with these animal bone deposits. And then when we excavated what we call Cave 12, which is to the south of Qumran, we found one right at the entrance where they were going in to hide things in the caves. And I dug that one with my own hands. I found it at the entrance. So we can say if these oil lamps only existed in the caves where the scrolls were and with the community where these guys were, then that's very unique. We have other things, too. We have these kind of bowls that were used either to carry oil or to carry or just, you know, for various purposes, the same type things. And these are unique in that. We also found the fragments of the white linen in the caves and then also in some of the excavations. So these type of things show there's a connection between the site and the scroll caves that you don't find anywhere else. And that, to me, makes a good argument that the same people did it. We also found through using the ground penetrating radar and also various types of metal detectors, there are trails going from the site of Qumran out to the northern caves. It's like a whole trail right there. You can see it from the air, can't see it from the ground, but when you did the metal detector, you found hobnails from little sandals, you found coins sometimes leading right from the Qumran community to these caves. And it's a similar thing to the south. We didn't know that until we started the work there, but you can see that the trail still exists from ancient times, going right up to the end of the Qumran plateau where you have, you know, some of the caves that are disintegrated now, but right at the edge of the plateau. So the trail going down all the way to the south, about a mile. So I think we can argue that these scribes worked at Qumran. They certainly, because this was a study center, what we would call a yeshiva in that sense, and they were writing these things, or making copies. I think they brought in these scrolls with them when they came, because we have such a variety. We have the entire Torah, but we have all these scrolls of the minor prophets and the prophets themselves. These things had to be individual scrolls they brought in. And I don't think we have Esther scrolls, because this was something that every family would have as part of their celebration when they dealt with Purim, and I think they took them with them, so they didn't leave them behind. So that's my argument for that. But anyway, I think there were scribes there, and if you were a priest, you were also a scribe in one real sense. So we find every evidence of that. Like Joe said, you have where we have the scriptorium, where we have the benches and the or tables and these oil and the writing tools, the oil ink wells. But the room right next to it was a room where they found just dozens of oil lamps, because it was a place where they would actually do the study and work, whereas in the other room they would do probably sewing the sections of the scrolls together. So there's real evidence, not that they wrote these things themselves there, but I think they were copyists. The true scribal work to preserve these things, and that's why you have some in the caves and some at the community.
Truly is fascinating. Well, Randall, I'm going to stay with you for a minute, because you've mentioned various caves. You've mentioned Cave 12, you've mentioned Cave 1 and such. Help give our listeners an idea of how many caves there were, and what were some of the major discoveries in some of those caves? You don't have to go into great detail, but just kind of a bird's eye view.
Yeah, I'll just give you a summary. I mean, for instance, there were 11 caves found up to 1957. And then we discovered, I would say, three other scroll caves to the south beginning in 2017. So let's just do a summary. I mean, Cave 1, you have the Great Isaiah Scroll, the longest of the biblical scrolls. It was both an Isaiah Scroll A and an Isaiah Scroll B. There were two copies there. Very important thing called the community rule, which gave all of the, I guess, rules that govern their community. That's the one I mentioned included this section on the Messianic banquet. You had a commentary on the book of Habakkuk, which showed that they took very little interpretations of things, but applied them in their time as though they were experiencing the fulfillment of prophecy. The war scroll was one in which they are following Ezekiel 38-39 and preparing for an end time battle. Thanksgiving hymns, which is kind of a parallel to some of the Psalms, and then Genesis Apocrypha, which gives kind of a filled in version of some of the events in the book of Genesis, including that with Noah and the flood. Cave 2 was important. It had all kinds of biblical text, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, all these kind of things. It also had some of Jeremiah, the Psalms, Job, I remember Ruth, and particularly a New Jerusalem text, and then it had some apocryphal texts like Jubilees and others. This is a cave just across from Cave 1. Cave 3 was very important. They found fragments of a commentary on the book of Isaiah that was part of a rat's nest in there, but nothing they could really put together. But they found the copper scroll. The very last day when they were cleaning up behind a stone was placed on a little niche, a pure copper scroll, two of them, which were apparently a much longer kind of document. And this is a treasure map of 66 hiding places throughout the Judean desert and other parts of Israel where there's an immense amount of treasure. And that everyone now agrees it was a literal treasure, but what happened to it, and is it still there, is still a matter of just, well, things dreams are made of. So a lot of us dig with hopeful intention, but that's there. And that copper scroll, by the way, can be seen if you go to Amman, Jordan, to their major museum there in Amman. Next, we come to Cave 4. This is the mother lode. These were not buried in scroll jars. They were buried underneath the floor of the cave because apparently they were done in haste when the Romans came to invade the community in 68 AD, and it was part of the putting down the Jewish revolt. They were running toward Masada, which was to the south, and so they stuffed these things into the cave. I think they went down south to the other caves, got scrolls out of jars, took the scrolls. We found scroll fragments at Masada in what was the Geniza there, where they stored these old documents. And then we found these caves with the scroll jars, but they were empty. So that's my theory. So they just ran on the way because they couldn't go to the north and get the scrolls from those caves because that's the way the Romans came. So that was cut off to them. So you find scrolls in those caves, not in the others. But in cave four, from this floor, you found, gosh, we found Paleogenesis, Paleoexodus. You found almost all the books of the Old Testament. I mean, you just name it. You know, you found Targums on Job, you know, all of the historical books, all of the minor prophets, commentaries on Hosea and Micah and Nahum and things like this. Daniel, there were 9 fragments of Daniel. The war rule of Phlegon, it's kind of a last day's midrash. One of the important ones, Testimonia. It was a list of just Old Testament texts, but they were texts that we know now we identify as messianic prophecies. And you could see what they were doing was taking these texts and putting them in a certain order. And from that, we can see that they saw this same messianic prophetic progression in the Old Testament that we see. A lot of Aramaic texts, a lot of sectarian texts. And one of these important was called the Son of God text. Early on, it was called On Resurrection. But this is one that mentions Son of God, he should be called Son of the Most High. And it's a very interesting text. There's K5, 6, 7, 8. K5 had biblical texts. Some of the same texts you find in Damascus Docket, Community Rule, New Jerusalem text are there. K6, you had Daniel fragment. You had Enoch giants. You had Samuel through Kings, a number of things from there. K7 was all Greek text. Had a Septuagint, Exodus, Septuagint, Jeremiah, epistle. And then there were fragments that early on they identified, hopefully, as fragments in the New Testament, but they found that they came from the book of Enoch. So these were all Greek texts. Cave 8 just had a couple of biblical texts, and Cave 9 and 10 didn't really yield anything of substance. But Cave 11 had Paleo Leviticus, it had the Job Targum, and it had Melchizedek text. And the real important one was the Temple Scroll. And that's the longest of the Dead Sea Scrolls, 27 feet long, and that came from there. And then I mentioned Cave 12, which had 2 sections to it. We found 7 scroll jars. They were all empty except one had a fragment of a scroll that came out from it. But at this point, we haven't been able to identify a text on it. But we know there was stuff there. And possibly some of the texts that we find at Masada, one of which is, you know, a text of Ezekiel, probably could have come from there.
Great overview, and thanks for that. Again, just fascinating excavations and discoveries here. We could literally spend weeks on this. But Pat, one of the scrolls that Dr. Price mentioned was the copper scroll, and he mentioned that it was found in Cave 3. He suggested that it was a treasure map. Give us a little bit more background on this. Why is it so unique, and why has it captured everyone's attention?
You know, the copper scroll is one of the more intriguing discoveries made there at Qumran. And unlike most of the scrolls, which were written on leather or parchment, these scrolls were written on copper, you know, and they provided an inventory of buried treasure in over 60 sites. And many of these sites, they believe, contain hidden treasures located around Jerusalem. And many believe that most of the treasures appear to be valuables connected with the Temple of Jerusalem there. And so the copper scrolls, you know, reflect a moment of volatility, instability, because wealth we see was being hidden. There's deep concern of an invasion, which describes the times just before the war with Rome and before the fall of Jerusalem in 70 AD. So, as Dr. Price mentioned, you know, no treasure has been found at the sites investigated. So perhaps maybe in the future, as they continue to research, maybe they'll make some more significant discoveries connected with the copper scroll.
Thanks for that, Pat. Again, it's one of those that have captured the imagination of many, many people. Well, Joe, we only have a few minutes left of this broadcast. I want to remind our listeners, we're going to be covering the Dead Sea Scrolls on next week's broadcast as well, so you're surely going to want to join us then. But Joe, let's just wrap up this episode by looking at what archaeologists and scholars think why the Qumran community put these scrolls in the caves. What was it that precipitated them going from a community lifestyle and hiding them in caves. What are some of your thoughts? And then we'll turn it over to Dr. Price to get his thoughts as well.
Well, just in the little time we have left, I think that the people who stored them there, there's all kinds of different theories about, you know, why they were placed there, who placed them there. And as Dr. Price gave us some wonderful bits of information there to lend us to believe that it could have been the Qumranites who put them in those caves. I think that's the most prevalent view and the view that I would probably adopt. But remember, those caves were a great hiding place in case they wanted to stash them, to hide them from the Roman army that was coming through that territory during the time. And then later they could go back and recover those precious scriptures from those caves. Also, caves served as a place for storage. There were many niches and places to stash those scrolls inside those caves, and the temperature conditions were quite good for preserving texts over long periods of time. I think the average temperature in there was just the same as what museums try to replicate to keep for their scrolls to be well preserved. So I think it was for safety reasons, for preservation reasons, proper place to store. All these different factors would come into play about why they would choose those caves. And they were in close proximity to where they lived. That would be very important as well.
Hmm. Dr. Price, any further thoughts on that?
As we have excavated the caves, one of the things that we found is that the scrolls that were put in there all seem to be from the same time period. There are some from the Roman period that are put in, but probably not at the same time, probably put in later, but from the type of pottery and other stuff that's put in there, it all seems to be from that first Qumran 1b period, which is back in the, let's say, around 100 BC. And that's, I think they're preserving stuff for sure, but they're hiding it definitely. In my own work trying to find these things, these hiding places are very obscure. They're very small. They're not where people would go and live or stay for any time. They hide them in niches. They hide them behind placed stones. It's just a very interesting thing. So certainly hiding is a big part of this, preservation too, because they seal the jars with ropes, with a type of pitch, with all kinds of things to make sure these things would last. And Jeremiah had said early on, one of the statements God told him in preserving a document in his time for after the exile, it said, you know, put these in an earthenware jar that they may last for a long time. So I think they were following that precedent, and that was part of their practice.
It's fascinating. And fortunately, we're not finished. We're going to be covering this extraordinary excavation and find on next week's broadcast as well. And we want to mention Dr. Price's new book coming out. You could go to Amazon and do a pre-order. It's called The Comprehensive Illustrated Survey of Biblical Archaeology. And I also want to mention his book that we're using kind of as the foundation for these two broadcasts, Secrets of the Dead Sea Scrolls. Again, those two books are The Comprehensive Illustrated Survey of Biblical Archaeology, and you can place a pre-order on that one, or you can order Secrets of the Dead Sea Scrolls. Dr. Price, Joe, Pat, what a marvelous broadcast. I truly thank you for joining us, and I'm looking forward to next week.
Yes, thank you, Brian, for having us all on.
Well, be sure to join us next time as we conclude our series on archaeology of the Bible, continuing our discussion on the Dead Sea Scrolls. Until then, may the Lord richly bless you.
Our time today has come to a close. Be sure to join us again here on Evidence and Answers. Our goal is to bring you the love of Christ and to equip you in your faith to always be ready to give a response. If you would like to hold an apologetics conference or series of teachings at your facility, contact Pat by calling him in Hawaii. That number there is 483-0586. Or email him through the Evidence and Answers website. That's evidenceandanswers.org. Be sure to browse through our listing of topics on our site. We have everything from atheism to Zen Buddhism. You will also find articles and additional audio free to listen to or download. An additional location to find Pat's messages is on YouTube. Look up Evidence and Answers and hit that subscribe button. To keep quality broadcasts like Pat's on the air, we rely on generous financial support from you, our listeners. Donating is simple. Once again, log on at evidenceandanswers.org. Evidence and Answers is grateful for one of our sponsors, the Honolulu Christian Church. If you don't have a home church and are looking for a great place to grow in your faith, check out the Honolulu Christian Church. For service times, log in at honoluluchristian.org. Join us again next time on the air or online as we provide compelling reasons for faith in Christ. That's Evidence and Answers with Pat Zukeran.